So our first speaker after the talk is Colin Tobin from SDSU, and he'll be giving a talk on their integrated crop and livestock systems.
Hello, everyone. I'm Colin Tobin. I'm a master's student at South Dakota State University, and today I'm going to talk to you about the integrated crop livestock systems and their impacts on soil health parameters. So today, a little outline of my talk here. I'll have an introduction. We'll go over some materials and methods. I have some results and discussion, and I'll follow up with conclusions and then acknowledgments. So my project was based out of South Dakota, and the two main drivers of the economy in South Dakota is crop production and livestock production. And the eastern half of the state of South Dakota is dominated mainly by a corn-soybean rotation, while the western half of the state is dominated by a wheat, corn, sorghum, or sunflower rotation. And we use winter variety small grains instead of using spring varieties. Just because of climate conditions, we can capture that late fall moisture, and then right away in the spring we can get the snow melt. The second enterprise that we have that drives our economy is livestock production. And across the state, grazing intensities vary. In the southeastern corner of South Dakota, it takes about roughly 5 to 10 acres per animal unit. And one animal unit is roughly 1,000 pounds of live animal weight. The northwestern corner of the state, however, takes roughly 56 to 65 acres per animal unit to run for an entire year. And the Black Hills, which is in western South Dakota, is a forested condition, and that takes roughly 80 to 100 acres per animal unit for an entire year. So some concerns we have with land management in South Dakota. Over the past 10 to 15 years, there's been a giant conversion from range and pasture lands into croplands. And this has been mainly due to commodity price increases. And with this decline in acres of range and pasture land, we've had increased pressure put on those lands. And that, in turn, has declined our rangeland health. We've taken out the native species of grass, and we've brought in other species that are less desirable and less palatable, such as smooth brown grass, Kentucky bluegrass, and also some toxic plants as well. Another land management concern we have in South Dakota is limited soil moisture. There again, in the southeastern corner of South Dakota, we average about 29 inches of precip a year, while in the northwestern corner, we get around 15 inches of precipitation a year. And lastly, one of the big concerns that livestock producers that also produce croplands also, they worry about the compaction issues we have on grazing those croplands. We looked at an integrated crop livestock system, and there's several definitions for this, but one of the most basic, but one of the best definitions is the combination of crop production with animal husbandry on the same unit of land. And a couple of small examples of this would be grazing corn stalks in the fall after the corn harvest, or grazing cover crops, which some people plant maybe following a small grain harvest. And generally these happen in the fall. Some benefits to an integrated crop livestock system. ICL systems have the ability to improve soil health. We can take the biomass that's produced on the ground, we can put it into cattle, they can digest it, break it down, and then we can apply that manure directly back to the soil surface without ever having to take it out of the field. We can increase diversification. We can bring in crops that people normally wouldn't grow, such as millets and other small grains that can be used as forage rather than just the corn-soybean rotation. We can improve economics. We can decrease the labor costs of feeding cattle in the fall by having cattle out on croplands feeding on their own rather than putting down concentrated feedstuffs. And there again, cattle on green feed do much better by putting on weight naturally than they do on concentrated feedstuffs, which they have a tendency to put a lot of fat on. Some cover crop mixes that people use in ICL systems, they're very diverse. We can go anywhere from two species up to past 20. It just depends on what your management goal is. But two of the main drivers are legumes and grasses. With legumes, we have the opportunity to have some nitrification done And then grasses, on the other hand, they don't produce nitrogen, but they can scavenge for nitrogen, and they also can decrease in the amount of leaching of that nitrogen that might happen in the fall. So our study hypothesis, integrating livestock onto cropland can increase nutrient cycling and positively impact soil health. From our hypothesis, we came up with two objectives, and for the rest of the talk, I've combined these two for time's sake. But our first objective was to investigate the impacts of integrated crop livestock systems on soil surface, physical, and hydrological properties. And our second objective is to evaluate the short-term changes in carbon and nitrogen fractions as affected by grazing, cover crops, and grazed cover crops in an integrated crop livestock system while using a no-till corn, soybean, rye cropping system. So our study site was located in just west of Beersford, South Dakota, which is in the southeast corner of South Dakota, at the Southeast Research Farm, which is owned by South Dakota State University. The soils underneath the plots that the study was done on is the Egan soil series, which is a silty clay loam texture. It's relatively small, 1.32 acres, with a slope of nearly level, 0 to 2%. And our crop rotation was corn, soybean, and rye. So our plot layout, we had a split plot design with four treatments. And in the corner of this map, it doesn't show up real well, but we have our three mixes. It was six. Each mix was six species, the same six species, of radish, pea, lentil, cowpea, sorghum sedan grass, and oats. But we varied in the rates, so we have a grass blend, which is mainly oats and sorghum sedan. We have a brassica legume blend, which is mainly radish, pea, and lentils. And then we have the equal blend, which is an equal blend of all four. And then a control, which was no cover crops planted, but we did have rye regrowth in that in the control. And then of that, excuse me, we did four replications. So our soil sampling and analysis, we went down three times, and the basis of the study was short-term impacts. So we looked at the pre-grazing, which was November 2nd, 2015. That was the day before we put cattle out. And then the post-graze period, which was November 13th, 2015. And then lastly, we went in the corn phase, which is after the corn has been planted and was growing, July 1st, 2016. And each sampling date, we went down and we took core samples for bulk density and soil water retention from two depths. We did auger sampling at four depths. And then we did microbial sampling from the surface depth. So the parameters that we looked at for this study was soil pH and electroconductivity. And the soil pH was done 1-to-1 saturated paste. And electrical conductivity was done 1 to 2.5 soil water solution. Bulk density was done using the core method. Soil water retention, we used pressure plates and a static hanging water column. And lastly, we went through and did soil water organic carbon fractions. So our left picture here, we have the auger sampling. And as you see, that's 30 centimeters of depth, and it doesn't come up too well, but there is a tick mark at the first 5 centimeters. And then our picture to the right is a typical hoof print after grazing in the residue. So our results from our study. Soil pH was right around neutral at about 6.9 to 7.2, but was not impacted due to cover crops or to the grazing treatments. And soil electrical conductivity also followed suit. There was no significant differences due to cover crop treatments or grazing. But we did find some interaction or some impacts due to grazing on the bulk density. And we found that at two depths at both the post-grazed and the corn phase time. And one of the theories that I think happened was when we put cattle out, soil was a little moist, and also there was a little bit of rain at that time too, which caused the soil structure to lose its strength. And there, in fact, and bringing on cattle caused compaction. Soil water retention was not affected pre-grazing due to the cover crop treatments, but post-graze period, we did see an interaction or an impact between grazing, and we found that, like bulk density, we had some macropores get taken down, and that's where you see that leveling off at the grazing period or the grazing impact. But when we look at the corn phase period, we get our gain our macropores back, and you can see that as we add suction, we decrease the amount of water in our soils. Microbial biomass carbon, we didn't see any interaction between or any impacts, between the treatments or the grazing. But as you'll notice, that there's about a 30% increase in microbial biomass carbon in the corn phase as compared to the post-graze period. And I think that has to do with all the residue or all the biomass that the cattle digested, put back onto the soil as manure, gave the microbes fresh feed right away in the spring so they could start actively replicating and doing their work. Cold water carbon fraction, the labile carbon fraction, we saw an impact at the post-graze period, but then when we looked at it again in the next spring, we didn't see that trend. So I have to say there's no there was no trending of impacts due to grazing. So some conclusions from our study. Grazing did impact bulk density, but did not. We started to lose that trend when we looked at water retention the next year due to the freeze-thaw cycle. Our microbial biomass carbon was not affected by an individual treatment, but it did increase the year after cover crop growth. And our labile carbon fraction was lower due to grazing, but the trend could not be proven the following year. So I'd like to thank a few people. First off, the NRCS that funded this grant, and my lab team. If it wasn't for them, I'd still be working on the project. And lastly, the Southeast Research Farm for allowing me to have the project there at Beersford, and also the help with planning and handling of the cattle. References from this presentation. Thank you. Questions? We did a 0 to 5 centimeters and then a 5 to 10 centimeter.
So do you think if you get compaction from grazing, if it's that shallow, do you think it would be alleviated by freeze-thaw or in the following winter?
Yes. I think depending on the climatic conditions, there with the freeze-thaw, it'll definitely come back. And our shallow depths really focused on just the hoof interaction. We didn't look any farther down than 10 centimeters to see if there was any impacts due to grazing that deep.
Okay. We're going to hold off for any more questions. He can answer some at the break. So thank you very much.
Thank you.